everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Andrew Tate has a theory for why things are failing. It is due to people's wives. Your fate is inexorably linked to the aircraft mechanic's wife. She was complaining at him all morning for something that wasn't his fault. She, in true female fashion, blamed him for her own decisions in some twisted backflip logic, which deeply frustrated him. While pondering how a woman he took care of for 13 years can be so brutally ungrateful, a temporary lack in concentration caused him to miss a single screw. That screw, plus the bad weather conditions, resulted in the unfortunate plane crash in which you were one of the 221 victims, a woman you never met, who will never face justice and will never ever take responsibility, murdered you. I don't know if it's in relation to an actual airplane crash or if it's just a hypothetical scenario, but it is interesting to think of a society of disloyalty and how no one is really truly invested in their work. Everyone has a dozen things on their head as they work. It is a tough world when you have to juggle and manage this whole personal life where you can't trust the people around you, and then you have to go to work to slave out to the system. It may not lead to the same quality of work, and so women are extremely important. I believe that's the message from Andrew Tate. Women are extremely important, and how they take care of their husband is important for the whole of the world. Saturn Shine says, oh, because some spouse is annoying, he takes it out on innocent people. Well, it's not that he took it out in this example, in this fictitious example. The fact that he had so much things to think on his mind made him do a lesser job on the airplane, and you end up dying in the airplane. Najel says, that is retarded. One screw is not going to fuck everything up on an airplane like that. I don't know if that's a joke, but I mean, as far as the current airplane that didn't end up in killing anyone, but did end up with a section of the plane just detaching and exploding out and depressurizing the cabin. It does seem that screws may be related. We are learning today that Boeing is finding a lot of unloosened screws that would require a few screwing, a few more tightening of the screws. I don't know if that's in the Boeing that failed or if that's in their Boeings in general. We also learned that two consecutive days before the side of the plane ripped off, there were red alarms that the staff of the plane noted, and they saw the red alarm that was saying there's a problem with cabin pressurization. They then sent the planes for these 2 days, that's January 3rd and 4th, they sent the plane to maintenance, and the maintenance marked it as safe. And the third day, there was this blowing up of the side of the plane. So there were definitely signs that were not properly monitored. They say they were monitored, but they were not monitored in a way that would detect the issue. Saturn Shine says that, and the drunks on the planes and the emotional support animals. Yes, there is a stacking effect. Simeon says, I fly Alaska Airlines several times per year, a dozen or more. Yeah, I don't know if it's a thing with the airline itself. It's hard to tell. Is it Boeing at the construction level because it was a freshly constructed Boeing? Or is it at the maintenance level? There were certainly warning signs that the maintenance staff could have seen. John Drake says, I have a feeling red alarms are pretty regular. Well, that's what they say. They say it's a routine thing to have this red alarm turn up, but when an alarm is a routine thing to the point where you don't make up all the checks that are necessary, the routine aspect of the alarm at this point is handicapping your ability to respond to an actual alarm. The ARP just told its 38 million members to get an eighth vaccine shot of mRNA. The lobbying group for older Americans just told its nearly 38 million members to hustle for another COVID jab, even if they have already had five boosters. So five boosters. How did they call the second and third dose? They were doses, vaccine dose, vaccine dose, vaccine dose, booster, 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 booster. If you're not dead yet, yes, you can safely take the vaccine. It's like at this point, the vaccine probably killed who it had to kill. And DK Shadow says, I'm boosting again. Oh my God. Yesterday, I was talking with my girlfriend, and I realized that this is scaring me. This is scaring me. I realized first that I'm with this wonderful woman because of Vox Day. And I realized I'm with this wonderful woman because of my maniacal plan to advertise myself during the disappearance of Mama JF. Because talking with my girlfriend, who is an absolutely wonderful person, who appears to be someone who wants to dedicate her life at making me happy, and that is so comforting after hundreds of girlfriends in my life, to find someone who is really just there to not to mess up my life, but to make it more positive. And she tells me that this is the blog post from Vox Day that she read that led her to contact me by email. Vox Day was posting, perhaps she just evolved. There appears to be a very strange situation surrounding JF, the evolutionary biologist I debated on the subject of the mathematical impossibility of evolution a few years ago. Yes, and I remember this debate, and I totally destroyed Vox Day by preempting his argument that he wanted to make, and I said that argument won't work. He kind of tried to test me, like, would you accept an argument like this without even making the argument? And I said no, I would reject it because it doesn't work if you compare this with sexual selection. In sexual reproduction, your mathematics are not valid. And he came up and tried to do the argument, and I was like, no, that's sexual, that's human beings. Human beings are sexual beings. They don't evolve at the same speed as bacteria. Anyways, that was the debate. So then Vox Day quotes a paragraph of, I don't know, written on the internet by someone. Lots of misrepresentations. Basically, it's the whole internet, trying to make me look like a murderer. And Vox Day says, considering that it took JFG three tries to understand a basic mathematical relationship, it's not absolutely impossible that he might think it's possible to rely upon such a flimsy and dubious explanation. So here he's referring to when he started explaining his way that he demonstrates that the Jewish IQ story doesn't work. And I was not satisfied by the validity of his argument. His argument was, well, IQ is low in Israel, therefore Jews have low IQ. The problem is the claim of Jewish IQ is a claim that is on Jews of the European world and not on Jews of Israel. And it could very well be that the Jews of Israel are from a distinct genetic line and that they have a different IQ. Now, instead of respecting that counter, Vox Day decided to go with the idea that I didn't understand. I don't understand his argument. I understand your argument. It's just a bad argument. And like when I'm asking you to re-explain, it's just in case I missed something, just because I'm stunned by the invalidity of argument of the argument and how you can continue saying this argument despite me having debunked it. That's why I'm asking, can you be more precise? Because I don't see it. I really don't see it. How does the IQ of Jews in Israel relate to the IQ of Ashkenazi Jews in the US or in Europe? Now, I happen to think that that the Jewish IQ claim is false, but I've been convinced by a valid argument of this, and that's the argument of Leather Apron Club. And I reviewed hours of videos in his debates and his responses by these leftist Jews. And ultimately, what I retain from all this is the problem of the Jewish category in these IQ tests is that it's self-selected. There are people who maybe are Jews and they are half Jews and they are three-quarter Jews and they are one-quarter Jews. And perhaps there is a mechanism by which the Jews selected into higher class schools tend to be in schools that tell them you are Jewish and that raise them as Jewish. Now, that's an IQ self-selected sample. Whereas the lower class or less genetically Jewish people might both have lower IQs, but they won't end up in the Jewish category because they don't self-identify as Jews. And if you have some mechanism like this, you're going to mess up the measures of IQ. Because in the Jewish category, you're going to be super exclusive, selecting the highest IQ ones. Whereas when you test the Christians, it's going to be basically everyone in America, and including the race mixers and everyone. So the exclusiveness of your category or inclusiveness will change the measure just out of a experimental artifact rather than a genetic reality. Anyways, so that's, I don't misunderstand your mathematical relationship, Vox Day. I just challenge it. Now, he says his last sentence there is what led me to grab the best girlfriend in the world. He says, but JF is sufficiently neurologically unique that it's also possible that he's simply telling the truth. JF is so bizarre that it's possible that he found himself in a situation where what did my bizarre cognitive structure lead to here? I'm telling the truth, but I'm not the bizarre one in this story. Mama JF decided to go on her own and decided to disappear from the world. That is not me being neurologically unique. That is her at best. Anyway, so by characterizing me as neurologically unique, my girlfriend, who is apparently a reader of the Vox Day blog, said, hey, that's true. JF is neurologically unique. I should send him an email and have babies with him. And the rest is history. So I was stunned by the realization yesterday that Vox Day, despite his hate and contempt for me, he got me a girlfriend. Thanks to Vox Day. Vox Day didn't reproduce here, but his memes live on, and there's other people reproducing thanks to him. As I was explaining to my girlfriend, this is a little bit the relationship between the cuckoo bird and the cuckold. Vox Day could have inseminated his fan base, but he left a void, and Papa JF came to fill it. It is evolution in action. It is a beautiful event, and I would like to thank Vax Day for sending me this girlfriend. Speaker's Corner says, Mama Jeff ran away from a Bitcoin millionaire. Nuts. Oh, well, that's a strong statement, a Bitcoin millionaire. But Bitcoin is doing good this morning. 47,000. I see it right here on my beautiful block clock. We are at 47K. We're just Monday. The announcement of the SEC hasn't even been made yet. And we all know it has to happen. It has to happen tomorrow, or else it has to happen Wednesday. It's going to happen. And, oh man, I can't believe we are already closing toward an all-time high. I don't know what will happen this week, but we could be headed to some crazy numbers. I'm super excited for this week. It's such a great winter. I'm energetically efficient. I have the heat pump working. Last winter, I may have used 4 to 5 tanks of heating oil. I'm not even through my first tank this year. I'm still above half on my heating oil. So we are absolutely energetically efficient, surviving in the cold. Bitcoin is rising. There's nothing more than I would wish. And I have a beautiful, spectacularly beautiful girlfriend. There's really nothing more that I would wish to have from the world. Maybe if I can get a little more time to do some math, I would enjoy, but that's okay. A dating in 2024, be like...
I have anxiety, depression, OCD, BPD, FOMO, and social anxiety.
For sure.
I have so many guys hitting me up on my DMs. It's crazy. Like athletes, rappers, actors, content machine. But I know better than to go for them.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, they have so many beautiful girls hitting them up constantly. But I know that's not a problem for you.
Oh, so you ignore their DMs?
No, I still get piped down by them.
Oh, that sounds fun.
But it doesn't turn into anything serious. Listen, I've had my fun. I'm not looking for that anymore.
So you're at least single?
No, I have a sugar daddy. We would have to keep our relationship private, but just for a couple of years until he dies.
Okay.
Okay, well, now I have a question.
By the way, what is this new trend of women with boobs, with big boobs and a Christian cross? That has been rising totally during the last few weeks. Of course, you used to see these women before, but the rate of them is enormous. I think I retweeted 3 of those. Big-boobed woman with a Christian cross, generally with a display of their boobs through some sort of lacing. Defenestrator says, those are holy knockers, Jeff. Oh, okay, so... their boobs are different. They are holy. Shadowban says they want to dupe a cuck Christian into simping for them. It's interesting. These kind of... I see a single thing that I notice on all these girls. They are a little bit older. They are older, bigger boobs. They have a lot of makeup. And they have this whole Christianity talk to them, like I want a... The one I retweeted was saying she wanted a husband who was further into the faith than her, that he would guide her into the faith even further. Saturn Shine says, Christianity is just a social club now. Yusferia says, Catholics believe they can be forgiven for every sin as long as they pray, so they just do whatever they want. Okay.
Question for you, cats or dogs?
Dogs. I don't really like cats.
Ew, you're disgusting. How do you not like cats? What are you, a psychopath?
Yes, it's a little bit what dating is these days. They will find something that justifies why they're not interested in you, and sometimes it will be something like you don't like cats or something like that. Shadow Band says Christianity helps whores launder their past with their forgiveness. There is a built-in failure in Christianity, which is this this eternal forgiveness, liberating people's mind. I'm sure my girlfriend would object to this. I'm sure she would tell you that if you truly have been receiving the saving of Jesus, that you won't want to sin. But I get your perspective on this. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, sorry if you covered this, but what do you predict the reaction BTC price will be on an approval / rejection from SEC? 55K, 25K? Oh my God, I'm not expecting a rejection. Now, if there was a rejection, you would get a fall of the price, probably not to 25K. If you trust past bull runs, you could think of a massive drawback going to maybe 30K. Maybe 30K at most. But I don't think there will be a rejection. I think it will be an approval. And yes, 55K is totally in the possibilities, but I don't do precise predictions like this because this event is so unique. Who knows? This is so unique, what's about to happen. All you can know is you have to be excited, and holy shit, it will be, it will go up. It's going to be crazy. And I've been in past bull runs, and it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for the bears, for the shorters. Because these bull runs, man, they don't fall. They're like stairs. They go up and just up and just up and just up. And then at a surprising moment, boom, they fall. But then they go just up. So there's no opportunity to short. And one thing I've learned in life, you don't short a bull run. You just buy Bitcoin. You just keep your Bitcoin. There's no money to be made on the little waves. Buy Bitcoin and keep it. Normie friends appearing in your inbox with BTC questions this week. They're like NPCs coming from the ground. Party rock! Yeah! They all want to know about Bitcoin. Hey, Jeff, you did talk to me about Bitcoin a year ago. You told me to buy it at 16K. To the 0.0001% who front ran the world, oh my God, it's a good feeling to be so in advance. I mean, I'm so in advance on Bitcoin, and many of you are too. We're so in advance on Bitcoin that we had multiple bull runs as the normies are now shyly entering the market. Like, I've seen it again and again. I've seen these bull runs again and again. We've been through it. We know what it is. They don't. My God. It's unbelievable that the asset of the future is one thing. It's not having diversified companies. Because one can fail, one can win. It's one thing. It's Bitcoin. It's the only thing that matters to wealth going forward. And there is no other way you can protect yourself against inflation. Tucker Carlson interviews the man behind the famous X account, Cat Turd. And my God, the boomer energy. Holy shit. How much boomer energy can you pack in a single photo? Cowboy style boots, maybe under the jeans, or just very solid shoes. Boomer jeans, boomer raincoat, and boomer glasses. The biker's gray pinch, and the boomer cowboy hat. Ladies and gentlemen, Cat Turd. You know, there's always these people on Twitter that I can't get along with. I can't consume their content. We don't connect mentally. And it's very hard for me to picture that, oh yeah, that's because behind these keyboards, there's a fucking boomer with a cowboy hat. It's so hard for me to fit it in my brain because automatically for me, when I interact with someone on the internet, I assume I'm with a young adult, maybe my generation, maybe slightly older adult. But it doesn't cross my mind that there may be a boomer with a cowboy hat just typing, and yet here they are. So Cat Herd, I've never been super impressed by his Twitter account. I've always preferred the Kittler, the Hitler cat from Gab. I found him more interesting, more current. And so now I understand, now that I look at him, oh, okay, this is Cat Herd. So that's why I'm not interested in his content. We have an update on the man who, you know, flew at the judge and started attacking her. He is back in court in front of the same judge, but this time, look at what they've done. Oh my God. Yeah, you can't do much with this. He is totally locked. His hands are totally wrapped in gloves and his mouth has an anti-spitting device. And he couldn't bite, I guess, with this mask. It's Hannibal. Just like in the movie Hannibal. Stephen Robinson says guilty. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that will be the conclusion. I mean, do you really have a chance when you're in the... Do you really have a chance to a fair trial when you're in the Hannibal mask? I don't know. Maybe I should try it. Maybe I should say, I would not like to spit on the judge. I would like to voluntarily be given the Hannibal mask for my trial for the disappearance of Mama JF. That would be pretty provocative. Pretty amazing, considering the 24/7 anti-white propaganda. The white man is still the most desirable asset on dating website. So we have racial data coming out, fresh racial data coming out of dating websites. 77% of Tinder users are white, 8% are Hispanic, 9% are black, and 5% are Asians. According to a study, Asian men and African-American women are the least likely to get a match on Tinder. Poor Asian men. I mean, isn't it so sad? The Asian man is at the bottom of the ladder. And you know, their woman is not at the top, but she's at the top. She's high. It's fascinating. There is no race in which there is such a discrepancy. Like, black women are at the bottom of the selection ladder, but black men are also at the bottom. But the poor Asian men, they keep getting their girls stolen on Tinder. Now, a lot of Asian women will go back to dating Asian men, and they have this conception that they must continue the race. But on Tinder, they don't. On Tinder, they seem to go for other races a lot, and that leaves Asian men hanging. Shadow Band says, Asian women have the least testosterone, and black women have the most. Yeah, I think ultimately it's an evolutionary race. How can your civilization keep testosterone at the lowest possible level in females? That is basically the evolutionary game. And I guess that depending on the context, like I guess that survival in Africa for the woman requires maybe slightly higher testosterone. Maybe it's too rough there. maybe it's too rough from a food gathering perspective or from a social, you know, warrior, societal violence perspective. But there's some reason why certain societies evolve to fully lower the testosterone level in females, whereas others fail. Defenestrator says black men have high estrogen, hence they're very excitable. Okay, I don't know about this. I would have to check. In the UK, Indian males have a 38% match rate on Tinder, which is one of the lowest among all ethnicity. Yeah, the Indian males, my God, they came in drove to Western civilization, but now there are so many of them. You're not rare. If you're not rare, you have no value. White males get more matches from almost every group on Tinder. So the white male, despite how much we bash on white males, as Ramsey Paul is pointing out, despite how much they dunk on us on an everyday basis, we are still the most desirable asset, as demonstrated by people's actual choice. Black men reported feeling rejected and stereotyped on Tinder, while white men said they felt most preferred. Absolutely. Now, still, don't go on Tinder. It is not the right... There is a way to make dating on the web happen, but Tinder isn't it. Tinder is the lowest of the low, and you're going to find yourself in trouble if you go for it. Let's talk about Dr. Ricardo Duchesne, who was a guest. He was a guest on my show back in the days. I believe I've spoken to him. If it wasn't on my show, it was on some... Yeah, maybe it was on my show. but there's... There's always these people who have been part of the identitarian crowds in 2017, 2018, and they're walking back a little bit on what they said. I don't know if in his case we can say it's a walk back, because back in the days, I don't know if he had already expressed these ideas. But I think he's totally wrong. Whether that's a new idea or an old one, Ezra Cole says, did Ramsey Paul ever retract the JF murder slander? No, he didn't. And shame on you, Ramsey Paul. I will still call him Inspector Rotting Brain until his brain finally rots into death. Shame on you, Ramsey Paul, for smearing me based on loose conjectures of yours that are completely ridiculous. A guy cleans his house. Therefore, he's a murderer. Shame on you. You go in death in shame, and you're going to hell. Dr. Ricardo Duchesne, race realism should not be foundation of European identitarianism or the dissident right. Culture and history are more important than race. The claim that culture is downstream from race is gibberish. Gibberish? It was the other way around for Europeans. Their cultural creativity was a product of their ability to attain a higher degree of autonomy from biological kinship determinations. Natural selection is good to explain cultural universals, but barely capable of explaining what made Europeans unique. Their high creativity in thought, arts, sciences, exploration, music. Race only makes sense as a subset of ethnos, which stands for collective sense of peoplehood, language, traditions, religious beliefs, and historical ancestry. What a bunch of bullshit. All of this is bullshit. All of this is wrong. Let's go sentence by sentence, and then I will read my full response. Race realism should not be the foundation of European identitarianism or the dissident right. To that I say, race should be the foundation to the extent that it's a useful foundation. You know, I look at the what is this culture that he's illustrating with this picture? These little girls in red and white. Okay, it's all very cute. Maybe it's Dutch or whatever. It makes sense for me to know about the subcultures like Dutch, Finn, French, English, Spanish, if that's my world. But it's not my world. We're in 2023, 2024 now. And the people of Europe have been sent across the world in a way that at this point, as I indicate in my answer, I have more, there's more importance in highlighting how I am very close to a Dutch person who would live in Canada or in Alaska. We are tied together in a way that is much more important than our differences. In light of the alternative, because the alternative is to live in Chicago. See, in maybe 700 years ago, it would make a lot of sense for me to identify very strongly as a northern Frenchman of some subsection of current France, and being very different from a Dutch person or a Finn or a Spanish. But in my current context, race is a damn good measure. It's a damn good measure to make sure that my neighbor is Dutch and not South African, American, you know, South Black African. That's good enough, and it should be the center of my identity to the extent that it serves me. For now, knowing exactly what this culture is and what these red capes indicate and where do these hats exactly come from is not so useful to me. So at different times and different era, a different foundation for identity can be useful. For now, I don't care about being dressed in red and white like this. I care about making sure that my neighbor is Dutch or French or Spanish, basically that he's white. Culture and history are more important than race. That is claiming that an embedded component is more important than the whole. Race determines all of culture and history. Like we're doing right now, you take a bunch of Muslims, you bring them in France. You've just changed French history. And if you bring enough of them, you made France, you've given a history of Muslimhood to France. And they will build the culture of tomorrow. So race isn't separate from culture and history to begin with, and it's not less important then. It's actually encompassing, and culture and history are expressions of race. One example I give is, imagine you take an African and you raise him in the exact same way Frédéric Chopin has been raised. Do you think he's going to come and produce the same genius music, the same music that Chopin has been producing? No chance, no chance at all. He's not going to, and people were telling me, well, maybe it's because he doesn't have the cultural references. Even if you train this black person and somehow you find a magical way to make him feel like he's white, and you have an invisibility cloak that allows him to transform himself and look as white to others, he doesn't have it in him to become Chopin. You wouldn't get Chopin. He says the claim that culture is downstream from race is gibberish. No, it's not gibberish. the European cultures that have existed could not have existed if you replace the if you colonize their countries with Africans. You can take any aspects of the culture, including these clothes here. A bunch of Africans populating this country would not converge toward these clothes. They would not converge toward having seven girls wearing these clothes being photographed like this. No chance. So yes, culture is downstream from race. Certain races cannot produce certain cultures. Go away, says JF. Kanye West is the modern Mozart. Checkmate. I thought of this. I knew that this objection was coming. And the answer to this is there may be some form of African genius that leads to the production of African music that is genius in its own right. But that is not Chopin. That is not the amount of work and the amount of and the fineness of Chopin's work couldn't have been reproduced even by Kanye West. Even by Kanye West. John Drake says, just like JF doesn't have it in him to become a cornerback in the NFL. Aha. Well, exactly. I would totally concede to this. I can't be a quarterback. Okay, that's not in me. And it was the other way around for Europeans. Their cultural creativity was a product of their ability to attain a higher degree of autonomy from biological kinship determinations. That is bullcrap. There is no point in European history where we have been freed from the chains of biology. That is a delusion. You may have the impression. What? Because there were intra-racial wars between white people? You think that this freed us from our biological imperative? You think that this gave us an autonomy from our kinship? No, it didn't. It's not because there's competition within a group that the group doesn't exist. We have had competition, and it has shaped our European life, and it has made us better, I would argue. I mean, when you survive all these wars, you must have something better than the other white people who were there before. But we haven't left our biological kinship determination. To the contrary, they just got refined. We started fighting between the French and the English, between this and that. And those groups exist in parallel to the wider group that we were. Just like there can be competition between a bunch of subpopulations of wolves for territory and domination, but they're still wolves, and they still are able to reproduce with one another, but they are at war for the moment to obtain a resource that is limited. Rudy Lacid says, only the best or the fittest survive to make the next generation. Yes, and in the case of war, I think war can have a positive selective effect. It can also have a negative one. If everyone clashes and kills each other, then all that you have surviving are the cowards that stayed back, and now you start selecting for basically parasitism, for living in a society without contributing to it, and ensuring that other people go in the front line. And I think the most wrong part of this tweet is where he denies the effect of natural selection. He says, natural selection is good to explain cultural universals, but barely capable of explaining what made Europeans unique. Their high creativity in thought, arts, sciences, exploration, music. That is false. You can totally think of evolutionary explanations for all these features. You just assert it, Dr. Duchesne. You're just asserting this without demonstration. You don't know. How can you state that science and exploration in Europeans hasn't been due to natural selection. There must be a natural selection pressure for a desire to escape, to find new things, to be curious. This must have been selected. The social success of a scientist must have been selected too, as he acquires more attention toward him, more success, more money potentially. So all these things, arts, science, exploration, and music, have been rewarding evolutionarily. You cannot just assert it didn't matter to natural selection and not explain what's your argument. Do you have a measure of selection? Do you have a measure that allows us to know that these things really stemmed from purely cultural processes that had nothing to do with selection? No, you don't know. You are making it up. So my overall answer to Ricardo is as follows. The ideologies that are fit for a historical time are not necessarily fit to all future ones. Sure, when you live in Europe in the 1300s and enjoy the protection from southern migration waves by the cold of winter and the unavailability of instant global transportation, it might make sense to have strong traditions that distinguishes you as a Frenchman in Alsace from someone in the Netherlands. But after centuries during which people have been sent in all directions, both as the European peoples colonized North America and as Europe itself got colonized by southern peoples, thanks to instant global transportation and modern heating technology, making the European winter more hospitable for the migrants, then the ideologies we need today are much different than those of yesterday. It is not so important for me to highlight how different I am from my Alaskan neighbor of Dutch ancestry. Instead, what we need is an ideological concept that highlights just how much we belong together in comparison to the alternative, which is both of us hanging out in the Bronx. Race is this concept, a concept fit for the future, perhaps even more than the past. You are wrong, Dr. Duchesne. So I think it's important that race may very well be more relevant in the future than it ever was in the past. Because in the past, race didn't need to be considered. Race was implicit to our lifestyle. Because we didn't have instant transportation, you didn't have to keep it in your head if you lived in Europe that there's these people that are Indians, there's these people that are Asians, and there's these people that are Africans. Because these people didn't matter to you. All that really mattered is, oh my God, there's a bunch of English people right there with swords and they want to chop my head off. Now, it made sense then to say, I am strongly French and you are strongly English and I'm afraid of you. But in 2023, the key is reconcentration of white people. And honestly, it doesn't matter so much if you had ancestry that was not French, that was maybe Dutch, or that was maybe Spanish, or that was maybe English. As far as I'm concerned, we're on the same team and we have common interest in reconcentrating white people wherever we can. That is why race is a damn good measure to use today. It's because in the criteria for being satisfied by the reconcentration, I think I can build a society with a bunch of English and Dutch people. I don't know that I can build a society in which my descendants survive with other people, because I think that the hate against whites is going to become stronger and stronger across generations until we are in genocidal completion territory, where life becomes impossible for white people. And in that review, assessment, whiteness is a good criteria to work with. Starkick Warlord says we need our own white concentration summer camps. Yes, I guess. We need to reconcentrate. I don't know if summer camps is the right path to adopt, but it could work. Dino Dogovic says, Jeff, why do you eat fillet steak when you could eat rump? Have you just assumed the kind of steak that I eat? Fillet steak. When did I ever say I eat fillet steak? I eat ribeye. Ribeye is my favorite piece of steak. And rump, I don't even know. Rump is like the worst piece of steak. Rump steak. Let me try to Google it, but I don't think that it's a cut of beef. The rump is the division between the leg and the chine cut right through the haunch bone. This is the cheapest. This is the least interesting part of the beef. What the fuck are you talking about, bro? The rump steak. Bro, you can see that there's no fatty parsley. You can see the tightening of the muscle fibers surrounded by their glowy structure here that comes out as brown after the cooking. You can see the overly fibrous aspect of the rump on the side. Bro. Rump is not super interesting. There's really no way you can cook this piece of meat to be a noble meal. Ribeye is definitely superior to rump. Because ribeye has the parsley, ribeye has not the overly fibrous structure. Ribeye is extremely tender, doesn't need to be cooked very much for it to be totally chewable. You are totally misguided. I reject your appeal to rump. I reject your false claim that I eat fillet. By the way, fillet, this whole filet mignon. Is that what we're talking about when you say fillet? You're talking about filet mignon? Filet mignon is interesting as a super tender meat. But to me, it's not even the best part of the beef. It's interesting because it's part of the T-bone, really. And the T-bone has this small part on the side that is the filet mignon and this big part on the other side that is the ribeye. The T-bone is the truly most noble part of the beef, and it's mostly because of the ribeye. Saturn Shine says, JF says mignon right. You English people, I'm the first person you ever hear with the right pronunciation of mignon. Yeah, I mean, the people who say filet mignon, it's... You're kind of trying to speak French with an Italian accent. It's funny. Usperia says, filet mignon is also good. That's why Wellington is good. You have to cover it in other flavors. Everything is good inside of a pasty crust. I agree with the end statement here. Everything is good inside a pasty crust. Maybe except shit. Like that shit would be uninteresting even if you were to wrap in a pastry crust. BNO News says United has found loose bolts on at least 5 plug doors during inspection of its Boeing 737 MAX 9 air fleet. So it seems that it's not necessarily the Boeing that had a side door kicked out, that had not even a door, it was a part of the fuselage. But it seems that in general, maybe the Boeing 737 had a loose screwer. This is so important because it may boil down to a single person. Like loose bolts. That's what they found during their inspection of... That's the inspection of the whole fleet. It's not the inspection of the specific plane that had an issue. But we learned from CNN... So it was a door plug in flight. The impact ripped headrests off seats and a shirt off a passenger. A Boeing 737 earned its certificate of airworthiness on October 25, 6 days before it found its home with Alaska Airlines. Before a terrifying mid-air blowout, it would fly more than 150 times. A few of those flights would tip off airline officials to a possible problem with the aircraft's pressurization, a federal official later would say. It even would be restricted from traveling over the ocean to Hawaii in case such a warning appeared. So the plane had been marked, "You don't fly this to Hawaii." Well, I would like to know as a customer, you know.
Wow.
Can you imagine the people who paid the plane tickets for this plane? It's like, oh yeah, can you write on the ticket, like, by the way, this plane is going to Alaska, but we wouldn't let it go to Hawaii. So the plane had been marked no Hawaii voyage because I don't know, they were already scared about it. Still nothing any... So then on January 3rd, and then again on January 4th, twice in a row, the flight crew flipped a switch to the system's backup, describing the move as very normal. They flipped it, they reported it, it was tested by maintenance, and then reset. So they flipped a switch that was warning them of pressurization issues. And apparently maintenance did some check, but did they check the fuselage structure? Did they check whether there were cracks, weaknesses in the fuselage? That must be pretty hard. Dino Logovic says, "You don't need to be a genius to put some bolts in." Well, you know, you do need some minimal amount of care. You don't need to be a genius, but you need care. You need to be able to care about what you do. Oh, that's a funny joke. I told a Canadian to kill himself. He told me to stop giving medical advice without a license. That is in reference to the new MAID program of Canada, where you can ask to be put to death and the doctors will deal with it. And it's now it's one of the main ways in which people die in Quebec at this point. One of the main reasons of death is voluntary death with medical assistance. But now, you know, telling people to kill themselves on the internet is about to become a professional offense that could get you in trouble because you're giving medical advice. People were asking me as part of the Ricardo Duchesne discussion. He says, "Globalists will just take this one step or 10 steps further. As you forgot about the differences between you and the ethnic tulip enjoyer, he will ask you to forget the differences between yourself and the Bantu. I agree with your point, but I ask you, where is the cutoff?" And my answer to this is the cutoff isn't stable at all times. We all know for ourselves where it makes sense to put it. It makes sense for me to put the cutoff right now at people of Western European origins. It makes sense from distinguishing me from the people I want to be distinguished. and included with the people I want to be included with. Now, in various scenarios, maybe this cutoff can be narrowed or broadened. But it depends on the scenario. Right now, as an American, as a person in North America, it makes sense for me to think of myself as white and to think of a Dutch person as white too, but not to think of an Arab as white. Open borders for Israel says, do you want to be included with Jews, JF? Well, see, Jews are a perfect example. The Ashkenazi Jews can be argued to be partly coming from Western Europe. Yet I consider that I'm not part of their group. That's because there's a function to it. It makes sense for me to distinguish the Jews because they are loyal to a larger, broader diaspora that includes a lot of Eastern Europeans and a lot of Middle Eastern peoples. So there's your example where, yeah, the cutoff is arbitrary and it's movable. But in different situations of history, you might have to move it. That doesn't mean it's not because a concept can be moved that it's not useful. You know, your taste for the ideal level of light that your phone should generate for you to see it properly, that in a dark room, that will be very low. But on a bright day, it will be very high. And sometimes you have to adjust to the world. So he says, so if the aliens come, you'll be on Team Ben too? Yeah. Would it be a problem if the aliens were indeed threatening all humans and an alliance with Team Bantu was in my interest at that time? Should I forego this opportunity? All of these are hypotheticals anyways. It's like, do I really care if my ideology could lead me eventually to be in the same team as the Bantu? No. I mostly care about making the right decisions in worlds that exist, in which I live. And so the right decision right now is to put the cutoff at Western European in origin. 14 words says, JF, I heard you mention in one of your last streams that women are infertile while breastfeeding. My girlfriend had our second child just under 2 years ago and has never stopped breastfeeding. She's now 6 months pregnant. Well, yeah, I mean, there is a time at which the breastfeeding becomes less necessary for the child. And you may not notice, but she's breastfeeding much less. If you have a 2-year-old child, the 2-year-old child will consume less milk from her. And so that's probably why you got a shot at reproduction despite breastfeeding. But I was talking about the first months and the first year. If you reach 2 years, she may still be breastfeeding a little bit and yet recover her fertility. But see, it has delayed a lot by 2 years. So that's 2 years she could have been pregnant and she wasn't. Okay, this guy is taking pranks to a whole new level. This is the kind of pranks that will get you killed. But I thoroughly enjoyed this prankster that was posted on our Discord. Unbelievable. You have to have courage to do that kind of pranks.
Are you serious, Shaniqua? What? Why the f*** are you talking to this still-ass motherfucker, this fat-ass nigga? Why are you talking to my ex-girl, nigga? Why are you talking to my ex-girl, nigga? Shoot me the fat one!
All right, so I have this black friend, right? Just kidding. What's up, dog? I'm just playing around, bro. I'm just playing around. I don't want no problem, dog. I don't want no problem, dog.
Shit, dog. What the fuck, man?
Hey, man, you want to hear a joke? You want to hear a joke? What does a black man do after sex? 15 to life.
Yo, it's a prank, bro.
Can I throw up?
What the fuck, Go put your who? Don't fucking put your who, huh? You know you at? You know you at?
You look thirsty right now. Can I throw a punch at you?
What?
You look thirsty.
There's a camera!
What do you want? Are you free?
It was a prank. It was a prank.
You do this, man?
It was a prank.
Do you know
it
me?
Was a prank. It was a prank.
I don't give a fuck, man. Why you do this to me?
He goes to fart on people. Oh my god, pranks in the hood. Yes, I wouldn't do this. I recommend against this. There were some guys, they were putting a knife, they were putting a gun against him. He's gonna be in trouble. Rudy Lassid says, there is nothing anybody could say that to me that would make me react like they do. Yes, that's what I realized. It's like there's this whole portion of the population you can't do prank with, really, because things are way too serious. Things are way too... The level of expected random violence is way too high, such that the moment for pranks is never. So it's funny to think that the features of a people may allow or not allow certain forms of humors to survive. And this kind of humor, pranks, is not the... It's not the greatest achievement of white civilization, but it's funny to think that perhaps it can only exist in a white world. DK Shadow says, since he's still alive, I'm going to say most or all of that are staged. Oh yeah, that's very sad, but the world of pranksters is has very much converted toward stage or semi-staged events, and it's much less interesting. You never know exactly if one is a real one or a faked one. What do we have before we close the show? Visualizing 50 years of game revenue, video games, the Pac-Man peak in 1982. There's oversaturation of the market, sells less and less. Eventually, the Game Boy, 1989. Street Fighter 2, 1991. Valve launches in 2003. The iPhone launches in 2007. Minecraft, 2011. 2013 is GTA 5. And look at this, peak, peak, peak. The mobile industry has taken over a lot of the sales. The PC world is growing healthily, but not as fast as the mobile. And the console is also growing or kind of stabilizing itself since 2010. Yes, very interesting. I didn't realize that I was hiding the console part. So you can see here, the console world has been very stable since 2010. In fact, since 2005, stable. Whereas you can see the light blue part, the PC world is expanding still. The handheld world has disappeared, has been basically replaced by the mobile world. And the arcade world has disappeared. Its peak, amazingly, was in the 1980s. And then look at this, arcade reduces up to basically nothing. Well, well, well. A fascinating view. Dino Rogovic says, Game Boy, where are you? My girlfriend is a big fan of the Game Boy. The Game Boy Advance, I believe, in her case. She seems to be very attached to Game Boys. Also has been an expert Nintendo 64 player. And so I'll probably set up very soon an emulator so that we can, so that I can play against her at the Nintendo 64 and show my superiority at Mario Kart. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love, and I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you.